Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So today we're going on to chapter 3 of Brihad Bhagavatamrita by Srila Sanatan Goswami. Today the discussion focuses primarily on Lord Shiva. We were hearing yesterday about the glories of Lord Indra and of Lord Brahma. They're very special persons, and in their own ways they have some mercy from the Lord. But at the end, Lord Brahma was saying that if you really want to see someone who has some mercy, or who really has the greatest mercy, it's Lord Shiva. So Narada Muni, he went to the Shiva Loka beyond the universe, outside the universe. It is there basically just by the Brahma Jyoti, and very special place. So Narada Muni arrived there and saw Lord Shiva. He was meditating. Well, he was in a trance, at least. He wasn't really meditating. He was in an ecstatic trance, having just finished his meditating on and worshipping Lord Sankarshan. So I guess he wasn't meditating, because he was dancing and shouting, Jai, Jai. Of course, we also dance and chant, and that's a type of meditation. But he was very ecstatic, just completely locked into his transcendental world of Krishna consciousness. And he was glorifying his assistants who were accompanying him with music and clapping their hands and so on. And Narada Muni arrived there. Of course, if you remember last night, when Narada Muni left Brahmaloka, he was so much into this idea of there being a oneness between Lord Shiva and Krishna. He was just so much into this idea that he was calling out, shouting out, with great fervor, Shiva, Krishna, Shiva, Krishna. So he arrived to see this very ecstatic scene. He became even more ecstatic, to the point that he tried to bow down, but he couldn't, because he was just dancing too much. So somehow he was not able to bow down. And I'm sure you know what he did. He saw Lord Shiva and he said, You are the greatest recipient of the Lord's mercy, and began to glorify him as Lord Brahma had told him, basically, giving the different examples and arguments which Lord Brahma had presented. So, Narada Muni approached Lord Shiva, wanting to take some dust from his lotus feet. But as he approached Lord Shiva, Lord Shiva became overwhelmed with a great inundation of ecstasy. He just grabbed Narada Muni and embraced him and asked him, what are you talking about by glorifying him? So he hadn't really digested the fact that Narada Muni was specifically focusing on him. maybe thought he was just feeling, you know, very happy to see him or something. But he hadn't really realized that Narada Muni was just into this thing about him. So they sat down together. But Lord Shiva noticed that Narada Muni was not now saying that he was the greatest, that Lord Shiva was the greatest recipient of Krishna's mercy. Now he had started chanting the six-syllable Rudra mantra, some special mantra glorifying Lord Shiva. And Narada Muni, after he recited that prayer for a while, started glorifying Lord Shiva as the supreme controller of the universe, and how Lord Krishna was so merciful to him. But Lord Shiva covered his ears and angrily spoke to Narada Muni. So he told Narada Muni, I'm not the Lord of the universe, nor am I a recipient of any of the Lord's mercy. I'm just a poor soul hankering for the mercy of the servants of his servants. In other words, he feels he's not fortunate enough to get some of Krishna's mercy. He'll just try for some of the mercy of the servants of the servants of Krishna. So, interesting thing happened. Narada Muni became bewildered, thinking, maybe I have committed an aparad by describing him as being non-different from Krishna. So he stopped glorifying Lord Shiva. And then, in a very soft voice, he spoke to Lord Shiva. First thing he said was, it's there, I mean, it's basically there on page 6 of your study guides, but it is a bit brief, a little brief, really. So, Narada Muni thought very quickly. He thought, let me say something which is a glorification, but which Lord Shiva is not really going to be able to deny too easily. So he glorified him as the head of a sampradaya. And of course, Lord Shiva could not say that I'm not the head of a sampradaya, because he was already the head. He said, you understand, you're the head of the sampradaya, you understand the confidential, mysterious glories of Lord Vishnu and the devotees, and you explain those glories very nicely as the head of the sampradaya. So Lord Shiva couldn't really say anything to that. And Narada then got a little bit more into glorifying that as a result of this, your mercy is aspired for by the best Vaishnavas. Then he started gradually getting into more sensitive areas. He said, actually, I know that Krishna respects you. And he even sometimes he glorifies you. Now Lord Shiva is getting disturbed again. Then Narada Muni went too far, at least for Lord Shiva. He said, I know that Krishna has worshipped you and has even begged you for benedictions before. Which is true. In different incarnations, in one of the Puranas, the Vamana Purana, there's a story of how Krishna prayed to Lord Shiva to get the Sudarshan Chakra, and Lord Shiva gave him the Sudarshan Chakra. It's a particular pastime. Then one time, it's also in the Vamana Purana, there's a story of how Krishna wanted a good son. So Lord Shiva gave him a blessing, and as a result, he got Sambha as a son. So when Narada Muni said this, Lord Shiva suddenly sprung up from his seat, and with both hands, he put both hands over Narada Muni's mouth. And actually, he was very upset. He said, "Stop speaking about my arrogant behavior." These things actually had happened, and he knew that they had happened. And he really regretted those things. He felt so embarrassed to be reminded that he had thought he could offer benedictions to his Lord. So Lord Shiva, again in an angry mood, and just like a distressed mood, he told Narada Muni that, "Don't you understand that these pastimes are just there just so everyone can see that the Lord's pastimes are incomprehensible? You can't understand the Lord's pastimes. In other words, don't take it seriously." But then he said, "You know, it's a fact. You've reminded me. I'm a big offender. And what to speak of not having received the greatest mercy from the Lord. I am surprised. I cannot understand how he has not rejected me. Somehow he allows me to continue doing something, but I just can't understand it." So Narada Muni grabbed Lord Shiva's feet, made him sit down, and told him that even though people may sometimes think that you're offensive when you do certain things, but Krishna doesn't see you like that. Because Krishna, the way Krishna sees you is that you're fully dedicated to spreading his glories and spreading devotional service, either directly or indirectly, one way or another. This is how Krishna sees you. So then Narada, because Lord Shiva, he was in this very disappointed state of mind, regretting what he felt were his offenses, Narada Muni tried to explain to Lord Shiva how he was really very dear to Krishna, and how there was evidence to support that. And not only that, to show that he got special mercy, and that he's definitely not an offender. So Narada Muni, he first of all mentioned Banasura. Banasura was a great demon. He had many arms. He wanted to fight with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he had become very powerful by worshipping Lord Shiva. So, the story is there how when Banasura was fighting Lord Krishna, Krishna defeated him and was just about to kill him with the Sudarshan Chakra. But then Banasura prayed to Lord Shiva. So Lord Shiva quickly appeared and appealed to Krishna, "Please be merciful. Please don't kill this Banasura." So when Lord Krishna realized that Banasura was very dear to Lord Shiva, he completely changed his mind. And he told Banasura on the spot, he gave him a four-armed form resembling his own, resembling Krishna's own form, like a Vishnu-type form, and said, "You can keep this form eternally." You'll never die. And you can become an eternal associate of Lord Shiva. So, such mercy Banasura got just on the spot, and only because Lord Shiva had intervened. Otherwise, Krishna was going to kill him. So Narada Muni said that this proves that you're very dear to the Lord and that he's extremely kindly disposed to you. He doesn't take you as an offender. Then Narada Muni gave another example. Actually, Narada Muni said that sometimes you give boons to demons who either want to attack the Lord based on the boon or harass the Lord's devotees based on the boon. But you are so clever that you give these boons in such a way that the demons think they just got a very nice boon and now they can kill the Lord or kill his devotees. But actually there are loopholes in the boons, so they don't work. So he gives the example of Kalayavana. You probably heard of Kalayavana. He attacked Mathura. And isn't it? No. That was Krishna as the Ranchor, right? With Kalayavana? Yeah. Kalayavana, it seemed like he was defeating Krishna. Krishna ran away, took him into the cave of Muchakunda, and Muchakunda incinerated him, right? That was Kalayavana. Now this Kalayavana, his background is that there is one sage named Garga Muni. Now he's actually a very famous Brahmin, but he had a son named Gargya, who was a bit of a demon. Yeah. So this Gargya, he wanted a son who could kill the Yadavas. So he prayed to Lord Shiva for that. And Lord Shiva seemed to give him that benediction that he could have a son who was Kalayavana, who could kill the Yadavas. But he wasn't able to kill them. He was only able to frighten them and frustrate them a bit. And in the end, he was killed. So there was like a type of loophole in that benediction. It wasn't as complete as it seemed to be. Then, Jayadratha, he was also a worshipper of Shiva. He prayed to Lord Shiva, please empower me to kill the Pandavas. So Lord Shiva, he said, he gave some benediction like that. He said, you can defeat them all if you fight them individually. But then he gave, he gave that benediction to Jayadratha. And he gave Jayadratha the benediction that if anyone kills you, or rather, if anyone makes your head touch the ground, then their head will split into seven pieces. So, Arjuna was aware of that, and eventually, when he killed Jayadratha, using the Pashupati weapon, which was given to him by Lord Shiva, then he decapitated him in such a way that Jayadratha's head went flying to some ashram where his father was, and his father was sitting there meditating. Suddenly he found, there is this head on my lap, and it is my son's head. And in shock and disgust, he threw it off his lap, onto the ground, and his head broke into 7 pieces. So it looked like Jayadratha had a good benediction, but there were loopholes in it. Then there's another one in the Bhagavatam. There's the story of how Lord Krishna fought with the king of Kashi and killed him, and actually threw his head over the walls of the city into the city itself, and everyone came forward thinking, great, that our hero, our heroic king, has killed Krishna and has thrown his head in just so we can see and become inspired. But then they saw it was his head, the king's head. So his son, named Sudakshina, performed a very quick yajna, black magic sacrifice, with the help of some priests, to produce a demon who could kill Krishna. And, well, actually, he prayed to Lord Shiva, and Lord Shiva told him to perform that sacrifice, so he did. So this demon called Dakshin Agni came out, fiery demon, and attacked Krishna. But Krishna threw this Sudarshan Chakra, and that Dakshin Agni demon had to run. And he ran straight back into the city of Kashi, all the way from Dwaraka, actually, and killed Sudakshina and all the priests who had performed that sacrifice. So even though it may appear that Lord Shiva sometimes gives the wrong benedictions, but actually he does it very cleverly in such ways that it won't really work, and hopefully offenses may not be committed. Then Narada said that even though Chitraketu offended you, you didn't become angry. So therefore, you're very self-controlled. You're very advanced. Then there was a benediction, or there was an offense, actually, which Lord Shiva performed, which was the offense he was most embarrassed about. That offense was, one time he prayed to Krishna, please let me become better than you. I want to become greater than you. So, when Narada Muni started talking about this, Lord Shiva became too embarrassed. It was too much. But Narada explained that actually, you were extremely clever in doing that. Because your idea was, you wanted to become a servant of Krishna. But you thought that if you asked Krishna, can I become your servant? Krishna would say, no, no, no. You're a great person. Don't serve me. He thought Krishna would refuse him, because Krishna is very humble, actually. So he thought Krishna would refuse him. So he thought of asking Krishna, let me become greater than you. And there was some sort of difficulty. Krishna would not grant that. So then Lord Shiva said, all right, look, if you won't let me become greater than you, then at least let me be your servant. So then Krishna agreed to allow him to become his servant. Because actually, this was Lord Shiva's idea. He knew that Krishna thinks that his devotees are greater than him. Just like Krishna drove the chariot of Arjuna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, he accepted the position of being the servant of his devotee. So, Lord Shiva's idea was that he would become greater by becoming a devotee. being accepted as a servant by Krishna. And where did he get that idea from? Because one time he was with Krishna, and Krishna was playing dice with Rukmini, and he wanted to beat her. So he told the dice that my devotees are more glorious than me, so that the dice would become inspired to allow him to win. It didn't say whether he won or not, but Lord Shiva heard Krishna say that. So therefore Lord Shiva thought, I want to become accepted like that. I want to become one of the servants. So in this kind of roundabout way, he came to the point where Krishna agreed, all right, you can't be greater than me, but you can be my servant. And then, as a result of that, Krishna told Lord Shiva and Durga, the two of them, that you can both give liberation on my behalf. You can both give liberation. So these are different points which Narada Muni is making to glorify Lord Shiva and to establish the fact, or hopefully to establish the idea, that he has got the most mercy from Krishna. He said, even though you have power and opulence way beyond Brahma's, but still you reject all of that, and you just act like a madman out of love for Krishna. By your mercy, some people, a number of people have become devotees, like the Prachetas. And by Durga's mercy, by your wife's mercy, others have also become devotees of the Supreme Lord. And in fact, in the second part of Brihad Bhagavatamrita, we will see how the one person at least, he becomes a devotee by the mercy of Durga. She gives him a Gopal mantra, and through chanting that, well, he becomes a devotee, but through chanting that, he actually becomes a pure devotee. So by Parvati's mercy, some people have also become devotees. And then his final point, that your wife is Krishna's sister. So if people, sometimes people think, like Chitraketu, that you are too close with her. The relationship, you know, is a bit too close, even for husband and wife. Like, you know, when Parvati was sitting on his lap when Chitraketu came. Situations like this, sometimes people think they're too intimate. But Narada Muni said, it's not like that. But because she is Krishna's sister, because she appeared, she was the daughter of Yashoda, who Vasudev took back to Mathura, and who Kamsa tried to smash on the rock. So she is Krishna's own sister, and she always gets his mercy, and that is why you care for her so much, and you look after her so much, even though you're completely self-realized, and you know you have no interest in just some worldly relationship with the opposite sex. But you are just very nice to her because she is Krishna's sister and is so dear to him. So Lord Shiva was now too embarrassed. He lowered his head and sighed, wondering if Narada Muni was making fun of him or what was he doing. He said, no, I haven't got any mercy. And actually, I'm a terrible person because I am the root of false ego. It is because of me that all the conditioned souls forget that they are the eternal servants of the Lord. So how can you compare me to Krishna? They're all eternal servants of Him, but I am the first person instrumental in making them forget that and just get lost in a complete world of illusion, thinking they're something other than that. So how can you compare me to Krishna? Then he said, not only am I the deity of false ego, but I am affected by it myself. And therefore sometimes I think that I'm the Lord of the universe. Sometimes I think that I'm a giver of knowledge, just like being the head of the Sampradaya. Sometimes I think that I am liberated and I am the bestower of liberation. And sometimes I even think that I give bhakti to Lord Vishnu. But it's all false ego. It's not real. I'm just thinking like that in my state of false ego. And not only that, but in due course of time, I get so overwhelmed by tamagun. I get so much into maya, so much affected by my wife, that I go completely wild in anger and I destroy the universe. Just see what a terrible person I am. He said, if I had even a drop of the Lord's mercy, then why did I fight with him when he was trying to take the Parijata tree? Because Lord Indra called for help, so Lord Shiva came and fought with Krishna when he was stealing the Parijata tree. That if the Lord is giving me mercy and accepting me as a devotee, why does he embarrass me by worshipping me sometimes? It is unfair. And why did he tell me to preach Mayavad? If he likes me, he knows I'm the right person to preach this philosophy because I'm in tamagun myself. So why did he tell me to turn the people away from him by concocting my own versions of scripture? And me and my wife, he says, we give liberation, impersonal liberation, which is despised by the devotees. So what sort of person am I? What sort of mercy have I got? I don't even have a drop of mercy. So now Lord Shiva makes his suggestion. Who does he suggest are the real recipients of the mercy of the Lord? He says, it is the inhabitants of Vaikuntha. They have the complete mercy of the Lord. So then he makes a very important point. It's really a very important point. He says, they are pure devotees. Now, this is something which nobody has really said yet about anyone else. You know, they've mentioned that they're devotees or, you know, in one way or another. But there have been so many other considerations, like being very opulent, ruling the universe, being independent. You know, all these things are sort of displays of mercy from the Lord. And they are special things, but they are not part and parcel of being a pure devotee. So when Lord Shiva describes the inhabitants of Vaikuntha and the mercy they have got from the Supreme Lord, he focuses on this point, that they are pure devotees, and everything about them is only to do with pure devotional service. So this is very, very important. It is the beginnings of discussion which is not based on any considerations other than devotional service. All the other discussions so far, they have involved devotional service, but not only devotional service, and even sometimes some other factors have appeared to be more prominent than devotional service. So, Lord Shiva says that the inhabitants of Vaikuntha, they are the real recipients of the Lord's mercy, complete mercy, because they are pure devotees. And then he gives many different explanations or examples of how they're pure devotees. That they have no material things. They've given up all material things as worthless like straw. They don't even look on material things. They have no pride. In other words, they're beyond false ego. He has already said that he has false ego, and one of the main manifestations is his pride, that he sometimes thinks he's the Lord of the universe, or sometimes he thinks he is the giver of knowledge, the big head of the Sampradaya. But these people in Vaikuntha, they have no pride. So they have no false ego. In other words, they are beyond him. And they have gone to a place which is beyond not just Lord Brahma and the living entities within this material world, but it is beyond Lord Shiva and his abode. And it is beyond the people, beyond the place where the people that he gives liberation to go. That is Vaikuntha. It is beyond just being in the Brahma Jyoti. So they are beyond all these things. And their bodies are Satchit Ananda. And they have Satchit Ananda powers and Satchit Ananda opulences. And they're simply satisfied to worship the Lord. He says that they travel freely preaching and helping others become devotees, many others. Narada Muni has mentioned that Lord Shiva has made some people devotees, and the example is given of the Prachetas. But he feels that he hasn't made many devotees. But the inhabitants of Vaikuntha, they have made many devotees. And sometimes they cause devotees to take birth in saintly families. Some of them descend, or they send some of their friends to appear in saintly families. Sometimes they protect, what to speak of making people devotees? Sometimes they protect devotees from falling down and then help them go back to Vaikuntha, like Ajamil. He was a devotee, but he fell down. But then the Vishnu Dutas came, the inhabitants of Vaikuntha came, and they saved Ajamil. And after a while, he went back to Vaikuntha after some time. So not only do the inhabitants of Vaikuntha make a lot of devotees, but sometimes they protect devotees from falling down and then see that they become delivered. And sometimes they intervene when the devotees in the material world are trying to spread Krishna consciousness. Sometimes they intervene to help them. And an example is not given, but last night I was reading a really amazing thing. It was a lecture by Tribhuvanath Prabhu. Some of you may know him. He's an old disciple of Prabhupada from England. And he had a lot of association with Prabhupada. He's really very wonderful. So it was a lecture of his on in which he's just talking about Prabhupada. And he said that he personally had two experiences with Prabhupada when they were at programs and Prabhupada told him, I think he said that someone had told him, but anyway, he was very emphatic about it, that in two programs, Prabhupada, in the middle of the kirtan, started glorifying Narada Muni. And afterwards, the devotees were talking to him about it, and he said that Narada Muni was there. He came to help with the program. Yeah. So some, and Narada Muni, he is a resident of Vaikuntha, specifically. So sometimes, the inhabitants of Vaikuntha, they intervene to help the devotees spread Krishna consciousness. And then Lord Shiva said that the inhabitants of Vaikuntha, when they see the liberated impersonalists, they laugh. They just laugh. They think it's humorous. They think it's foolish. That, of course, is in keeping with the one characteristic of pure devotional service, which is that those on the level of pure devotional service, I mean on very high level, like the inhabitants of Vaikuntha or something like that, that they just deride even the conception of liberation. And they think that the pleasure of it is like the amount of water in the hoof print of a calf compared to a great ocean, which is what they're experiencing. So they just laugh. They think it's funny that these impersonalists are so attached to whatever their experience of pleasure is. Then, the inhabitants of Vaikuntha, they can see the Lord always. They're with Him. Whereas Lord Shiva says, I only see Him sometimes when I meditate. Then I see Lord Sankarshan. But other times I don't see Him. But the inhabitants of Vaikuntha, they see Him always. They're always with Him. And whenever He goes somewhere to appear, they go with Him. And they assume all different forms to serve Him in different ways wherever He goes. So it's pretty convincing, actually. Yeah. So, then he goes on, actually. He goes on to make the point. He says, in Vaikuntha, that place is such a place. There's nothing other than devotional service there. And it's performed with unimaginable bliss. There, they have Krishna Prema. In Shiva Loka, Brahma Loka, generally they even if they're devotees, like on Brahma Loka, oftentimes there are devotees, generally they don't have Krishna Prema. In Vaikuntha, they all have Krishna Prema. So then he says, even if pure devotees have material bodies, still they're greater than anyone else. In fact, they're equal to the inhabitants of Vaikuntha. He says that you can see this because they exhibit the same symptoms. They have absolutely no material attachment to their families, their wealth, even their lives. There's just no consideration or conception that I must stay alive. The very advanced, pure devotees are beyond all material conceptions in terms of birth. They have given up any conception of having any debts, either to the demigods, their parents, or the sages. They have no fear. For them, liberation, heaven and hell, and everywhere else are the same. Actually, Lord Shiva says that about Chitraketu. Narayana parasarve nakutasjana bibhyati swarga pavarga narakeshu apituliyata darshanam. That when Durga cursed Chitraketu, he didn't protest, he didn't say anything, he just sort of thanked her, really, and went. So Lord Shiva glorified Chitraketu, that these devotees, for them, Swarga, the heavenly planets, Apavarga, liberation, Naraka, hell, doesn't matter. It's all the same. So therefore, Shiva says, they are as dear to me as the Supreme Lord is, and my greatest ambition is to have their company. And wherever you find them, in Vaikuntha or in the material world, it's irrelevant. Because even when they're in the material world, they forget their material bodies. And during this life, in many cases, they achieve Satchitananda bodies. And he gives the example is given of Dhruva Maharaj, who shortly before he went back to Godhead, he received a Satchitananda body. And when he went back to Godhead, he went in that same body. So there, Lord Shiva's final point is that their whole experience of life is no less than the inhabitants of Vaikuntha, the pure devotees within this material world. Their whole experience is not less in any sense than the inhabitants of Vaikuntha. So they're as good as them. He says, though, however, the inhabitants of Vaikuntha prefer to stay there because there they can see the Lord always. He doesn't say it in exactly, you know, precise terms, but indirectly he's saying they're attached to Salokya Mukti, being in the presence of the Lord. So therefore they prefer to stay in Vaikuntha. So they have the greatest mercy of the Lord. Then an interesting development takes place. Parvati, the wife of Lord Shiva, interjects and says that it is not just the inhabitants of Vaikuntha that you should try to approach and appreciate, or who have received the greatest mercy of the Lord. It is actually specifically Lakshmi. It is her. She is the one who has got the most mercy out of all the inhabitants of Vaikuntha. Now, there's a reason for that. Parvati is a partial expansion of Lakshmi. So she is feeling bad that her husband has been glorifying the inhabitants of Vaikuntha, but has not even mentioned Lakshmi Devi. So she says that along with being a pure devotee, she is definitely a pure devotee, but she is the ruling goddess of Vaikuntha. And it is just by her mercy that people, anyone within this material world, has any power, knowledge, detachment, or devotion. That she is so attached to the Lord, she performed severe penances to get his mercy, even though he apparently ignored her. And final point, she is the perfect chaste wife and is always with him in all his incarnations. So Narada Muni became ecstatic and started glorifying Lakshmi and starting off to the Vaikuntha planets. As he was leaving, Lord Shiva took him aside and said, in effect, "Don't listen to my wife. It's not Lakshmi. It's Prahlad. He has the greatest mercy." It's a little bit of competition between husband and wife going on there. Without Lakshmi being able to hear, Lord Shiva secretly, he told Narada, "I want to tell you something. It's a big secret, so let me take you aside." So without Parvati knowing, Lord Shiva explained to Narada Muni that actually Prahlad Maharaj has the greatest mercy. He is famous as the topmost of all devotees. Well, first of all, actually, Lord Shiva, continuing this point about pure devotees and how important they are, he quotes three verses from Srimad Bhagavatam, verses spoken by the Lord to Devasa Muni in the ninth canto, when Devasa Muni was being harassed by the Sudarshan Chakra. He went and tried to take shelter of Lord Narayan, but Lord Narayan preached to him that you have offended my devotee, and my devotees are so dear, they're so great. He said, "I am completely under the control of my devotees. Indeed, I am not at all independent. Because my devotees are completely devoid of material desires, I sit only within their hearts. And what to speak of my devotee, even those who are devotees of my devotees are very dear to me." So he speaks four verses from that fourth chapter, three or four, from the fourth chapter of the ninth canto. And then he says, Prahlad is the best because when we were all there with Lord Narasingadev, even Lakshmi would not go in front of the Lord. But Prahlad did. And the Lord accepted Prahlad. And then Prahlad told him, it's actually in 7th canto, chapter 10, verse 21. Lord Narasingadev tells Prahlad, "You are the best of the devotees." So Lord Shiva secretly tells Narada Muni that when you go to Vaikuntha, you look for Prahlad. He has the greatest mercy. So he says that, why is it, he tells Narada, that you have said that the Lord was so merciful to Banasura because I asked him to be merciful. But the reason was not that. It was just that the Lord remembered that Banasura is a descendant of Prahlad. That's all. And he had promised, as Lord Narasingadev, he had promised to give liberation to 21 generations of Prahlad's family. And Banasura, I think he's the great-grandson or something like that. He's a few, not so many generations removed from Prahlad. So Lord Shiva says like that, that it wasn't because I'm so dear to the Lord and he thought therefore I have to give some mercy. It's because he was related to Prahlad Maharaj. And same thing, the Lord became the doorkeeper of Bali Maharaj. Why? Because he is descended from Prahlad. And then he makes an interesting point, that even though the Lord is very attracted and attached, He's very attached to the old devotees like Lakshmi. She's been around since the beginning. She's one of the old devotees. But he has a very soft spot for the new devotees. And Prahlad is a new devotee. And he's a very good new devotee. So he likes it. He likes to give mercy. And he feels especially merciful to new devotees who have undergone a lot of difficulty for him. So therefore, just take it that Prahlad has the most mercy. So Prahlad is about, Narada is about to fly away. Lord Shiva remembers something else. He stops. Narada says, wait, one thing. Whatever you do, don't bow down before Prahlad. He won't tolerate that. He'll just leave you immediately. So don't offer him any respect too obviously. You'll just lose his association. So you have to be very clever and very careful about how you approach him. So like this, this is the story of Narada Muni's meeting with Lord Shiva in Shiva Loka. Any comments or questions? Yes. The question is that Prahlad is a disciple of Narada, and he acknowledges that. Prahlad acknowledges that in his prayers. So, surely Narada Muni knows this. See, the thing is, I think we explained right at the beginning sometime, Narada Muni knows all of these things. He knows all of these things. But he just wants to draw it out and make it very clear so that we go from step to step and we can see, you know, how there's one level, but then there is a higher level, and there is a higher level, and what are the differences between the different levels? Otherwise, you know, I had an experience. One devotee, trying to be a devotee, was telling me that, you know, in the Bhagavatam it says that the gopis, Krishna says, they're so great because they left their families. This person trying to be a devotee was a hippie. He said, but I left my family. I left my family. I don't go. You know, I thought they're all a bunch of nonsenses, and I left them. That was very common in the hippie days. So the thing is, you know, if we don't go step by step through the different levels, if Narada Muni, you know, right at the beginning there at Dash Ashvamedha Ghat in Prayag, everyone is saying, you're the greatest devotee, or you've got the most mercy. If Narada Muni had just got up and said, look, the gopis have, the inhabitants of Vrindavan have, and said a few things, you know, he's very expert, then they would have accepted it. But in this way, it becomes so vivid and so clear why different people are on different levels, what are the differences, how other people are on higher levels. And then, you know, by the time we come to the description about the inhabitants of Vrindavan, it's very amazing. It just, all these other experiences and other discussions that Narada has, they're just preparing us for that. So we can, when it's time to enter into that and try to absorb that and sort of get that idea, but it'll be as clear as it could be, really. Yeah. Otherwise, it's true. Narada, he knows all these things. Well, the question is that we said yesterday And that it's in Srimad Bhagavatam that it's said. I think it's in Srimad Bhagavatam that Lord Brahma and Uddhava, they have, of the people who are not residents of Vrindavan, they have like a special realization and understanding of and connection with Vrindavan. Lord Brahma, because he stole the cowherd boys and calves, but then, you know, Krishna showed him the expanded forms, and then he understood that all these people, they're very special, and this place is very special. So Lord Brahma, he got that realization about the people in general, the inhabitants in general, and the place in general. But Uddhava, when he gave the message of Krishna to the gopis, Uddhava understood the gopis' position. So the question is, what about Lord Shiva? You know, there are accounts of him coming in and, you know, getting some position. For that matter, Narada Muni is said to have been dipped in Kusum Sarovar and been able to join the Rasa dance. So that may be there. But, you know, these incidents are not so prominent. They're not like incidents mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam, you know, which are like the very main pastimes and the very most important leelas and most important happenings. So, like that, you know, in general we'll find, like, it is stressed a lot how Uddhava is extra special because of his special type of realization of the love of the gopis for Krishna. So, you know, I wouldn't say that I've seen like a detailed description of why there's a big difference, but I think it's like that these are such important pastimes that they're mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam. Therefore, you know, the position of Brahma and his realization, and the position of Uddhava and his realization, it's unique amongst those in terms of their realization of Vrindavan. It's unique amongst those who are not residents of Vrindavan. I hope that's sort of partially satisfactory. The question is that Lord Shiva has said that the inhabitants of Vaikuntha and the devotees in the material world are equal, but some of the devotees in the material world, or so many of them, are just trying to get out. So they're not, you know, they want to go, they feel they can't go, or they may not be able to go to Vaikuntha. So how can they be equal? Thing is, he is specifically talking about the pure devotees in the material world. Those who are the topmost pure devotees in the material world, he makes no real distinction between them and the inhabitants of Vaikuntha. And the only difference, ultimately, he feels, is that the inhabitants of Vaikuntha, they can see the Lord. They're with the Lord always. And in that sense, he feels they may be considered to have more mercy, because they see the Lord, whereas in the material world, the pure devotees do not always see the Lord. So therefore, even though they're equal, but still the inhabitants of Vaikuntha, they do have a special position, even compared to the pure devotees in the material world, just on that one ground, that they're able to see the Lord. When it comes to someone like Prabhupada, they would come to get his association. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, Prabhupada, yeah, they would come to get his association and to help. Yeah, it's not that there would be anything wrong with them thinking that they could help Prabhupada, because devotees want to serve other devotees, so they would come to help Prabhupada in the mood of being his servants like that. That's their mood. They just see themselves as servants of the servants. So it's nice. And they'll also maybe come and help other devotees who really need help. You know, Prabhupada, he doesn't really need help in a sense. But, you know, the ordinary devotees or aspiring devotees, the inhabitants of Vaikuntha, according to Lord Shiva, they sometimes come and they intervene and they help as they're trying to preach and spread Krishna consciousness. They do things like that. Yeah. Is that okay? Okay. Yes, Prabhu. That Lord Shiva is the head of the Rudra Sampradaya, plus the head of the Mayavad Sampradaya. Is that hard for the members of the Rudra Sampradaya to digest? That's the question. You know, this fact that Lord Shiva, Shankaracharya is Lord Shiva, to my knowledge, it may not be so well known or so much accepted. We accept it. But, you know, where Lord Shiva says that, or, you know, where that whole pastime takes place, where the Lord asks him to do that, he doesn't give his name. You know, it's not like totally clear that he's going to become Shankaracharya as such. But to my understanding, I don't know so much about the other sampradayas in detail, but to my understanding, it is mainly our sampradaya, more our sampradaya, who accept Shankaracharya as that incarnation of Lord Shiva. And frankly, I don't even know what the Rudra Sampradaya people think. In fact, you know, who's the Acharya of the Rudra Sampradaya? Is that Vishnu Swami? Vishnu Swami. Because that Sampradaya is more or less defunct, really. Yeah, it's hardly existing now. You know, really the only way it's existing is the followers of Vallabhacharya in Gujarat. But they don't really recognize Vishnu Swami. They don't really recognize themselves so much as being members of that Sampradaya. So anyway, I'm not really aware how they would think about that point. Sorry. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.